Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Was karma objective or subjective? How did God decide what was good, what was bad? And we had spoken about how there wasn't really any good or bad. There wasn't a punishment or reward, but rather it was how we used our circumstances. So today he said, well, but when you take someone like Hitler, who has wrought such evil and such suffering on the world, how does someone like that get away with it? Doesn't he have to pay in his next life? And even if he's born in a poor family, as you said, you know, that's not necessarily punishment, because he could take it in a way that isn't punishment, and actually he could benefit from it. And so where's the payback? Okay. So the first thing to realize is that karma, there's three types of karmic fruit that we get. One of them is immediate. I won't go into too much philosophy of this, but it's important to know. One of them is immediate. So in this moment, I feel thirsty, I drink water, I'm no longer thirsty. Or I am in a bar getting drunk, somebody gets too close to me, I punch them, they punch me back. Right? This is what bar fights look like. Okay? Immediate karma. I punched him, he punches me back. 30 seconds, fruit of that karma has manifest. Some karma is longer but short-term. Pujya Swamiji refers to it as short-term FDRs or short-term CDs. In America, they call them CDs. Here, they call them FDRs. FDRs. And long-term FDRs or long-term CDs. So you put money in an account in the bank, comes back to you after 3 years, sometimes after 10 years. Sometimes next life. But all three of those are in operation all the time. You take someone like Hitler, and what you realize is we look at it and we say, here is a man who was bringing suffering to others. When is he going to suffer? Well, what I could tell you, without ever having met Hitler, without having read his biography or autobiography, I mean, all I know is the facts of the history. I haven't actually read anything that would give me insight into what he said. But what I can guarantee you is, without even having that, he was suffering. He was suffering before he did it. He suffered while he did it. And he suffered after he did it. And the way that I know that is, people who are not suffering don't make others suffer. When someone is peaceful inside, when someone is happy inside, they bring peace and happiness to those around them. No one who is peaceful and happy inside goes out and slaughters people. No one who is peaceful and happy inside rapes people or beats people up. And this is true even starting at school age. The bully on your schoolyard is suffering. he's being beaten at home, or his parents are going through a bad divorce or something. I guarantee you, something is miserable in his life. Otherwise, we don't walk on a playground and start beating other people up. Suffering leads to actions of anger, of pain. It's all I know. This air conditioner back there gives us cool air. Right now in June, it's fantastic. Wish it were stronger. But if you stood there in January, you'd catch cold. Stand there long enough, you're going to catch pneumonia. But because it's an air conditioner, all it has is cold air. It's not one of those fancy ones that can give you heat also. It's only got cold air. It's all it can give you. In January, when you get sick from it, you get pneumonia and you wind up in the hospital, you say, my God, that air conditioner killed me. Well, the air conditioner was just giving you what it had. Couldn't give you hot air, it didn't have it. In the same way, when people are causing pain to others, it's because that's what they have. They have pain, they have anger, they have fear, they have misery. And so he was suffering long before he planned this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have planned it. Only people who are suffering need a scapegoat. I don't need to find someone to blame for what's wrong with my life. If I'm not living in a constant state of awareness that there's something very wrong with my life. And if I'm not suffering because of that. I'm only going to look for someone to blame if I'm suffering. If my life is good, or even if it's not so good, but I'm able to take responsibility for it, I'm not going to look around and say, it's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. We do that when we're A, suffering, and B, blind. So we know that's the existence he was living in before he even concocted this plan. We know he lived in it while it was on. Or he couldn't keep doing it. And even what we know is he had to go deeper and deeper and deeper into his own suffering. Build walls of separation between himself and the world. Between himself and his own spirit. Because his body was different from the Jews. But his spirit wasn't. And anybody who's meditated, anybody who has connected to spirit at all in any circumstance, connects automatically to all of creation. You cannot connect deeply to spirit in a mandir, in a church, in a mosque, in a gurdwara, in the woods, anywhere in the world. And walk out of that deep connection to spirit and start killing people. Because as you connect to spirit, it connects you to creation. And so in order to keep doing what he was doing, he had to dig himself deeper and deeper and deeper. And of course we know he suffered afterwards when he had to run away and hide, going from being someone who was a dictator to someone who was hiding in a bunker, even just simply from the ego perspective, was suffering. So that's what we're going to call the suffering in the moment. That's the in this moment fruit of my karma. It was fruit that bore fruit long before he even did his karma. What we also know is that in the future, he's going to suffer from it. But it's not about poverty. Because you're right, as we were speaking last night, that may be a very conducive environment for someone. But he's going to be in an environment that's going to give him the fruit of that suffering. Exactly what it looks like, I have no idea. But what I know is that's going to come to him because that was a long-term FDR that he put in the bank. And at some point, he's got to come back and empty that account. As a human, as an earthworm, who knows? But that's how the law of karma works. It's not you're evil in this life, so you're poor in next life. That which I get is that which I've sowed. He didn't sow poverty. He sowed seeds of separation. He sowed seeds of inhumanity. He sowed seeds of wielding power over others, of taking away people's actual gift given to them by God, which is their life. You don't get to do things like that without that fruit coming. What the fruit will look like, I don't know. But yeah, you can be very sure that it's manifesting all around him in whatever role, whatever body, whatever life he may be in. But also, lastly, that as we spoke, the fruit of our karma is also given to us so that we peel back layers and we get closer to God. And that ultimately the reason we're here is to recognize our oneness with God. And that's true about him too. Which means that despite the heinousness of what he did, God never says, I won't be one with you. Yeah, you got to clear all this first. You got to go through all this. But ultimately, his path is the same as any of our paths, which is to peel back our layers. His seem a little bit thicker than many of ours, thankfully. But ultimately, he's on the same journey, which is how to get those layers of ignorance, of separation peeled back, so he too can recognize and experience his oneness with God.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. I'm always in a state of turmoil, thinking too much about events beyond my control, and this is affecting my health. What advice can you give me, please? You know, it's funny because usually when people are in turmoil, what you'll hear them say is, I'm in turmoil because this person does that. Or I'm in turmoil because my husband this, or my wife that, or my children this, or my in-laws that. And then we have to be the ones to say, actually, it's not that person. It's actually your thoughts, and you know, you don't have any control over another person's actions, et cetera, et cetera. But here, it's interesting because the question actually already has the answer embedded in it. They don't need me to say, the problem is your thoughts. They don't need me to say, other people's behavior is out of your control. They know that. She begins, or he begins, with, my state of turmoil is from thinking too much about events beyond my control. So they're already almost there. The advice, therefore, of course, as well, so how can you stop? When you know the problem is you, you're almost there to the solution. The dilemma usually comes when we think the problem is someone else or something else. It's the traffic, it's the interest rates, it's my weight, it's my in-laws, it's this, it's that. But the problem is always in our own mind. Always. Doesn't mean things don't happen in the outer world. They do. But that's not what actually causes us the problem. The problem is how we react to, how we think about that which happens in the outer world. So how then do we stop? Well, when you realize that something that you are doing is negatively impacting your health, whether it's something like smoking cigarettes, drinking too much alcohol, eating too many cookies, living in Delhi where it's too smoggy. You know, when you realize that something that you're doing is impacting your health in a negative way, you only have two choices. Either keep doing it or stop doing it. Both options are in your hands. You can keep smoking, your health will keep getting worse. You can keep eating too many cookies, drinking too much alcohol, breathing too much in Delhi, your health will keep getting worse. Or you can make changes. Right? The doctor says give up smoking or you're going to die of lung disease. We've got a choice. God has given us free will. We spoke a lot last night about free will. Maybe it was the night before, about free will. Choice is ours. Keep smoking, die of lung disease. Keep eating too much, drinking too much, living places that are polluted. Well, it's a choice that we're making. We have that free will. But then, of course, there's the repercussions, which is my ill health. Similarly with our minds. There's not someone outside of us pulling the strings and saying, ah, happy, sad, jealous, competitive, blissful, peaceful. It's us. It's the choice that we make every minute. And I don't say that to simplify it or to make it sound easy. It's not easy. Working with your mind is probably the hardest thing in the world to do. But it is the only way in to pretty much everything else we want. And so we better get started. Whatever we're looking for, whether we call it joy, whether we call it peace, whether we call it love, whether we call it fulfillment, contentment, whatever word we use for really the core of what we're looking for, whether we aim higher, enlightenment, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum, The only way in is through your own mind. As Indreshchi said tonight in the Aarti, there's no place you can go and buy cosmetics for the mind and the heart and the soul. Well, there's no place that you can go and buy peace and joy and fulfillment, enlightenment. But we have the tool in our hand. We have all of the necessary ingredients for that factory in our hands. It's our own mind. It's our own thoughts. And so just as it's not easy to stop smoking when the doctor says you're going to die of lung disease, just as it's not easy to stop eating the laddus or the cookies when, you know, the doctor says you're diabetic, but you do it because you realize, well, I don't want to die of lung disease or diabetes or this or that. Yeah, it's hard, but it's worth it. I'm going to do it. It just requires, you know, discipline, tenacity, a willingness to be temporarily uncomfortable. The desires are pulling you in one direction. The habits, the addictions are pulling you in one direction. Just one puff, it won't hurt you. Just one cookie, it won't hurt you. It's the low-fat kind. You know, whatever it tells us. It's the same thing as it leads us into our patterns of thought. Just to gossip this one time, just to be negative and criticize this one time, just to blame someone else, just to hold a grudge, just all these little choices that we make are the equivalent of the just another cigarette, just another cake, just another this, just another that. And it's up to us. What's more important to us? My health, physical, emotional, spiritual, or my habits? And when our health is more important to us than our habits, when our health is more important to us than our desires, when our health is more important to us than the patterns in our own mind, then we start making changes. You know, Pooja Swamiji always says, whenever you wake up, it's morning. And whenever we decide, my emotional health, my physical health, my spiritual health is most important to me, we're going to start doing things for it. There's a wonderful story of a disciple who says to his guru, you know, I'm not getting enlightened. I'm not connecting to God, and I'm meditating, I'm trying, I'm doing it, but it's not working. And the guru says, well, so when you meditate, what happens? The guy says, well, first of all, you know, I always mean to meditate, but so many times other things come up, you know, I get busy, I don't do it. And then when I do it, my mind wanders. So many things to think about. Then I get tired, I stand up. So the guru says, come with me. He takes him to a river that's nearby and gets the guy in the river. And in the river, he holds the disciple's head underwater. The disciple first thinks he's just being blessed. Then he realizes, oh my God, my guru's trying to kill me. So he starts thrashing around naturally, as you could imagine anyone would, whose head was being held underwater, even by their own guru. And finally, literally, when he just thinks he's about to die, the guru brings him up. And he says to the man, so what were you thinking about down there? I was like, thinking about? All I was thinking about was getting a breath. Guru said, did your mind wander? He said, of course my mind didn't wander. I was going to die if I didn't get a breath. And the guru says, when you start to want enlightenment, the way that you wanted air, that is when it happens. It's not that the mind always wanders. It's not that you can't control it. It's that you don't want to control it enough. You don't want the alternative enough. The breath was more important to you than letting the mind wander. The breath was more important than all of the games the mind plays. So there it was. Stayed in one place, on your breath. No shopping lists, no grudges, no desires, no expectation, no what's for dinner. No, I can't believe he was rude to me yesterday. Just breath. And when you want enlightenment like that, that's when it happens. And so the answer to the question is just stop. Just stop the thoughts that are killing you. And you can. Again, it's not easy. It's simple, but not easy. And the only way to do it is to want the alternative. It doesn't matter if you want enlightenment. I don't care if you want that. We want peace. We want happiness. We want health. That everybody wants, regardless of whether you are on a spiritual path or not on a spiritual path. There's no one who says, oh yeah, I'd rather let my mind wander than have peace. I'd rather let my mind wander than be happy. We all want happiness. We all want peace. We all want love. And when we start to want that more than we want to let our minds wander, more than we want to hold a grudge, more than we want to be victims of our culture that tells us, ah, here's what you need for a good life. Make sure you make a lot of money. Make sure you acquire a lot of possessions. Make sure this. As long as I want peace and I want joy and I want fulfillment more than I want that, that is the only way to stop those thoughts. And you can do it. But you have to realize that it is your thoughts that are preventing you from having that. And so in every moment, the opportunity is have this thought that my mind has just started on, or have peace, or have joy. You know, I always talk about how our thoughts are tickets. And they take us to a destination. And whatever place you buy a ticket for, that's where you're going to end up. Get a flight to London, you're going to end up in London. Get a flight to Calcutta, you're going to end up in Calcutta. Get a flight to Chennai, you'll end up in Chennai. It's all a matter of where your ticket's to. And no one at any airport or any train station or any bus station can sell you a ticket until and unless you tell them where you want to go. It's the first question, where to, ma'am? Where to, sir? And so what we're doing is we're buying tickets to our own misery. We're buying tickets to our own illness of mind, of body, of heart. And we wonder how we got there. It's like buying a plane to London, get on the flight, and the plane lands, and you're like, London, my God, how the hell did I get here? Well, you bought the ticket. You got on the flight. It's no one's fault but your own that you landed down in London. Not that there's a problem with London, of course. It was just a good example. But in the same way, we end up miserable, we end up depressed, we end up anxious, we end up unfulfilled. Well, we're the ones who have jumped on these thoughts, like we jump on boats and airplanes and cars and trains, that say, ah, this would be better, that would be better, I should have this, I should have that, he's the problem, she's the problem, this isn't enough, that's not enough, I'm not enough. We jump on those tickets, we jump on the vehicles. And so naturally we end up in misery. But it's not the fault of that which was going on around us. It was the fault of the thought. And so our thoughts are the most powerful tools we have. Use them. And again, I know it's not easy. It's simple, but not easy. But it's the only way. And so we better get started. And it takes a while. Getting control of your thoughts is not an overnight practice. But nothing worth doing is an overnight practice. Whether you become a ballerina, whether you become a pianist, whether you become a scientist, nothing happens overnight. You learn, you work, you practice. And it's the same thing with our own minds. We practice. And slowly, 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 we find ourselves much less frequently ending up in destinations that we had no interest in going to. We find ourselves much less frequently with tickets in our hands to places that we never wanted to end up. And we get that control. And then we start to be able to say, Acha, where do I want to go? I want to go to joy. All right. What are the thoughts to cultivate? I want peace. What are the thoughts to cultivate? I want love. What are the thoughts to cultivate? I want enlightenment. What's the way to work with my thoughts and the space between them in order to get there? It's all in our thoughts. It's all in our mind. The scriptures tell us that the mind is the only answer, whether to our enlightenment, to our freedom, or whether to our bondage. It's all in the mind. So why start anywhere else? Why look anywhere else for the source of our problem? Begin. And slowly, 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 keeps changing. Every day you make a difference.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How is it that religion can be part of the solution to the environmental crisis? Well, when you think about what religion really is, forget the bad name it's gotten, forget the way that religion's been co-opted by things that aren't religion. It's been co-opted by power, it's been co-opted by politics, it's been co-opted by economics. But forget that, because that's not actually religion. That's people who want power, people who want money, people who want all sorts of things using religion to convince other people to do things for them. So, for example, if I want to be the king of a much bigger part of land, much bigger piece of land, and I say to people, go out there and risk your life so I can be in charge of a bigger piece of land. Very few people are going to do that. I mean, you've got to have people really devoted to you or really scared to be prepared to risk their lives so I can be the head of a bigger piece of land. But if I say to you, God wants you to do it, it's not the land. You're fighting for God. And even if you lose your life, you're going to God. God will reward you. So it's not about God. It's not about religion. God has been instrumentalized, exactly, to sell our agenda. So if we leave that aside and we talk about religion at the purity of what it really is, which is a way for people to connect to God, a way to understand our world, a set of tenets and beliefs and ideas about the universe and about our relationship with the universe, and a set of practices that brings meaning to our life, connection, fulfillment. If we look at religion as that, which is really what it is at its core, it's the full solution to the environmental crisis. And it's important here to realize that I'm going to interchange religion and spirituality, because they really are, at the pure level, one and the same. The only reason that today you have so many people who say things like, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, is because religion's gotten a bad name. Because religion has been co-opted. And so when people say that, what they mean is, I believe in God, maybe not by your name or form, but I believe in this divine presence. But no, I'm not going to sit in your box. I'm not going to be suffocated. I'm not going to be boxed up and wrapped up. I'm not going to fight to kill other people who aren't in our box. So that's what people mean typically when they say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. So in an ideal world, they really overlap. And when we're talking about the environmental crisis, religion, spirituality, are the answer. And they're the answer because the alternative, in most cases, is pretty much what for me. That's how most of us live. What for me? How can I be the top of my class? How can I be the one who scores the most goals in the soccer game? How can I be the one who's the valedictorian of my class? Then, of course, how can I get the best job? How can I make the most money? How can I become the president or the CEO of the company? It's all for me. How can I get the car I want? We speak about a global water shortage. We speak about a global food shortage. We have tens of thousands of children who are dying every day. every day of hunger. Forget those who are dying due to lack of water. Forget those who are dying due to malaria or so many other illnesses. Just due to hunger. Tens of thousands of children every day. But we actually produce enough food to feed 10 billion people. But the food is being cycled into the cows and the pigs and the chickens who become our hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken McNuggets. We talk about a global water shortage. But the truth is, we actually, if we changed our practices, there would be enough water. The problem is that our practices, again, of what we eat, how we shop, what we buy, how we live, this more, me mentality is driving us to kill the earth. Everything we buy is produced somewhere. Things don't magically appear in thin air. Whether it's the clothing we wear, whether it's the cars we drive, whether it's the mobiles we use, every single thing that we use was produced somewhere. Somebody made it. There was some waste produced from it. Something had to be done with that waste. And as our world is being driven more and more by the more for cheaper, because I want to save my money, buy as much as I can for as little money as possible, we have a whole model that's rooted on how many corners we can cut. So you have sweatshops. You have women and children who are working in hazardous, horrendous, toxic conditions, dangerous conditions, 18, 20 hours a day. You have crops full of cotton being sprayed with God knows what kind of chemicals that are giving cancer to the cotton pickers and their birth defects to their children, that are sickening the people who drink the water that flows through the river downstream. Because here's a secret about life. Whatever you drop on the ground is going to end up in your river. It's the nature of how gravity works. It's the nature of how life, how the planet works. Whatever gets into our soil is going to end up in our water. Gets in our groundwater. And eventually it gets into our water supply or into the rivers that are irrigating our crops. And so as we're driven for more, we're polluting our soil, we're polluting our air, we're polluting our water, and we're depriving the humans with whom we share this earth, the human beings with whom we share this planet, of water, of food. Forget what we're doing to all the other species. The statistics are terrifying. Of how many species, just since last Earth Day, in the last year, how many species have gone extinct? The Amazon rainforest is being deforested at a rate of about an acre a minute. Sorry, a second. An acre a second. A little bit more even. It's the size of a football field. So however many acres a football field is per second, the Amazon is being cut down. Well, the Amazon produces 20% of the oxygen for the world. It absorbs about 20% of the world's carbon dioxide. And it holds about 20% of the world's water. What's it being cut down for? Beef. Hamburgers. So we circle back to the question of what's the role that religion can play. Well, there's two aspects. One is more superficial, one is deeper. On the superficial level, we look to our religion for our tenets of how to live. So our religion hands us, here's your Ten Commandments. Here's the rules of life. Here's what we do. Here's what's pop and punya, wrong and right. This is what our religion hands us. So many things we do that our children ask us, why do we do them? And particularly in India, and we say, I don't know, but this is just, it's what we do. It's our culture. It's our dharma. It's what we do. So religion has that role to play to teach us that what we do is we live for the planet. We focus, as Pooja Swamiji says so beautifully, not on what for me, but what on what through me. How can I be a vessel for the divine to flow through me? We perform this beautiful yajna every night on the banks of Ganga. The message of the yajna with all the mantras is idam namam, idam namam. The mantras end with that term, idam namam. Not for me, but for you. Not for me, but for you. It's not about what for me. So that's one thing religion does that's very, very important. On a deeper level, though, religion and spirituality connects us with our true fullness. Why do we need shopping therapy, right? The number of people, the percentage of items that are purchased, not because we need them, but simply because we decided to go for shopping. Well, what are you going to buy? I don't know. Jaake dekh lungi. I'll go. I'll see what's there. Well, on a rational level, that makes no sense. I mean, if you really pull that apart, I'm going shopping for what? I don't know. Well, then why go shopping? I mean, if you don't need something, why would you go? But we go because, not because my toes are poking through my shoes and so I need a new pair. But we go because we're bored. We go because we're depressed. We go because we're anxious. We go for 100 reasons other than because we need something. And in that shopping therapy, that very, very temporary high we get with a new pair of shoes or new handbags or new clothing, the high is very short, but the ripple on the earth is very far, very long. And so when we're connected spiritually, we don't find ourselves going for shopping therapy. You don't see a lot of the saints and the sages walking into department stores, kind of roaming around, thinking, Acha, what should I buy today? Chalo, let's go for shopping. Never once, I've been here 22 years, never once have I heard Pooja Swamiji or any of the other saints say to each other, Acha, I know what we should do today. Let's go shopping. Let's go to the mall. Even just to see what it's like, never. Because they're full. They're full inside. There's not a sense of I need something to fill me. And so this drive to constantly have more is rooted in a sense of emptiness inside. I'm filling a hole that tragically cannot be filled with a pair of new shoes. But I'm not aware of that, and so I keep doing it. Not only do I not help myself, but I'm harming the earth. And so if we dedicated as much time to our spiritual practices as we did to our shopping therapy, we would be much better off, because at the end of the day, we would actually have a happiness that lasted. And the earth would be much better off. So spirituality or religion is, in my mind, absolutely the key. But the last point I want to mention on this is, it's not the only key. Because you don't have to be religious. You don't even have to be spiritual in order to save the earth or make decisions to save the earth. You simply have to care about anything. It doesn't doesn't matter what you care about. As long as it's alive. You have to care about something alive. A person, an animal, your unborn grandchildren. If you care about anything that is alive today or is going to be alive in the future, making decisions and choices to save the earth is the only answer. If you knew that your home was filled with asbestos, or you knew that your home was built on top of some toxic gas leak, and you were pregnant, or your daughter were pregnant, or your daughter-in-law were pregnant, you'd let a child be born in that home? You'd continue to live in that home? Of course not. You would do whatever you could do to get the asbestos out, to get this toxic gas plugged up. And if you couldn't fix it, you'd move. You wouldn't continue to live there because you would know, I have to protect myself. I have to protect my family. And that's what's happening on Earth. It's becoming literally toxic. The air in Delhi is toxic. The soil in so many places is toxic. The water in so many places is toxic. And sadly, what we're seeing is people now doing research on, well, okay, on Mars, what can we grow on Mars? I mean, the amount of money that is being poured right now into research on what can be grown on Mars, how people could possibly live on Mars. I don't know the dollar amount, but it's huge. But there's no need to give up on this planet yet. If we took all of that energy that we were spending on figuring out how we can, you know, grow potatoes on Mars and figured out how to protect our own planet, we'd be able to do it. There's a lot left. We're not yet over the tipping point. There's a lot that can still be saved. But it requires all of us to make a decision that's not about what for me, but that understands this is a family. No one would sit down at a table with their family members and grab the entire plate of chapatis that your mom put on the table. I mean, can you even imagine? 6 people sitting at a table, 8 people sitting at a table, a big stack of chapatis. One person reaches over, grabs the whole stack of them. Mother, we can't even think about it. You take one, then everybody else takes one, then, you know, this is how we live, it's how we eat. If we understand that much about our own dining table, we have to understand it about our world, because our world functions the exact same way. There's a beautiful saying that says, the frog does not drink up the well in which it lives. And that's what we're doing. And so whether it's religion, whether it's spirituality, whether it's just caring about anything in the world, the earth is ours to care for, to protect, and to preserve. For us, the earth lived through the ice age. She'll live again. Whether we call it the fire age, whatever the next age may be, the water age, the ocean age, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? The earth will live. She doesn't need a fine balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide. She doesn't need a certain temperature. She doesn't need a certain amount of fresh water. We need it. So it's us we're protecting. Us we're preserving. And that choice is up to us. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.